This is Bradcast producer Desi Doyen. We're off today. Today's Bradcast was originally recorded on November 21st, 2024.
Now there's, I think, a lot of relief that Matt Gaetz is no longer the nominee. One person said that this is such a relief, it is hard to imagine him appointing someone worse.
Well, that just sounds like a failure of imagination. Talking about Donald Trump, after all.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
Give him credit.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
No, it ain't.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is the Bradcast. That's heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA and elsewhere in California, Oregon, Pennsylvania, Hawaii, Ohio, New York, Louisiana, New Mexico, New Hampshire, Arkansas, Washington State, West Virginia, regular old Virginia, Wisconsin, and Minnesota. Not to mention a whole bunch of your favorite podcast sites and streaming sites around the world. Blanketing Planet Earth, I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us today. We have got a lot I need to try and jam in today. On our last show before a much-needed holiday break next week, including a guest who is joining us momentarily, who I'm very eager to speak with for, among other things, some advice on how to deal with your MAGA friends and family members over the holidays.
Woohoo! What fun!
You could use some advice. I'm just saying.
Yep.
Also, that was a woo-hooing there. That was Desi Doyen. She'll be back with our last, Green News Report before the break. Following monster storms in the Pacific Northwest over the past day or so, and some breaking news today on Donald Trump's clown show parade of wildly unqualified appointments for his supposed reboot second term in office.
It will be interesting to see just how crazy things are going to get.
Interesting is a nice way to put it.
Yes.
But I do need to hit this very quickly. Early this morning, it was reported that the death toll in the Gaza Strip from the 13-month-old war between Israel and Hamas has now reportedly surpassed 44,000, according to local health officials on Thursday. While the Gaza Health Ministry does not distinguish between civilians and combatants in its count, it has said that more than half of the fatalities are women and children. The war began when Hamas-led militants stormed into southern Israel on October 7, 2023, killing some 1,200 people, mostly civilians, and abducting another 250. Around 100 hostages are still inside of Gaza, at least a third of whom are believed to be dead. Most of the rest were released during a short ceasefire last year. Anyway, you look at it, horrific numbers all around. And then, less than an hour after that news broke on Thursday morning, there was this. The world's top war crimes court, the International Criminal Court, or ICC, issued warrants for Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, arrest warrants for Netanyahu, for his former defense minister, and for Hamas's military chief, accusing them all of crimes against humanity. The warrant said there was reason to believe Netanyahu and former defense minister Yoav Gallant have used, quote, starvation as a method of warfare, unquote, by restricting humanitarian aid, and that they have intentionally targeted civilians in Israel's campaign against Hamas in Gaza. Charges that Israeli officials strongly deny. Netanyahu, the far-right leader of Israel, who has long been facing criminal corruption charges himself from his own government, condemned the warrant against him, saying Israel, quote, rejects with disgust the absurd and false actions by the court. The decision, however, turns Netanyahu and the others into internationally wanted suspects, putting them at risk of arrest when they travel abroad. Its practical implications, however, could be limited since Israel and its major ally, the U.S., are not members of that court. Still, the warrant marked the first time that a sitting leader of a major Western ally has been accused of war crimes and crimes against humanity by a global court of justice. Specifically, the charges detailed in the warrant are for war crimes using starvation as a method of warfare, crimes against humanity, including murder, persecution, and other inhumane acts, intentionally attacking civilians, depriving the civilian population in Gaza of essential supplies like food, water, and medicine, which led to severe malnutrition and dehydration, resulting in civilian deaths, including children. Now, for the record, the charges do not include genocide, as many, I believe, wrongly have accused Israel of carrying out, even if I do believe them to be guilty of the crimes that are detailed by the ICC arrest warrants today, which require member states of the International Criminal Court to arrest those folks like Netanyahu if they step foot into the ICC's 123 member countries. The case at the ICC is separate from a legal battle that the Israel is waging at the top UN court. That would be the International Court of Justice, in which South Africa accuses Israel of genocide, an allegation that Israeli leaders staunchly deny. The ICC also issued a warrant for Mohammed Diouf, the head of Hamas's armed wing, over the October 7 attacks that triggered Israel's offensive in Gaza. It said that it found reasonable grounds to believe the man was involved in murder, rape, torture, and the taking of hostages amounting to war crimes and crimes against humanity. All of this puts Israel's allies, including some of its closest European friends, in a pretty awkward position at this point. Several leaders, including France, welcomed the court's decision on Thursday and signaled that they might arrest Netanyahu if he visited those nations. Human rights groups applauded the move as well. The warrants against both Israel and Hamas leaders, quote, break through the perception that certain individuals are beyond the reach of the law, said the Associate International Justice Director at the Human Rights Watch. Despite the warrants, none of the suspects is likely to face judges in The Hague anytime soon, however. While member countries are required, as I noted, to detain suspects facing a warrant if they set foot on their soil, the court actually has no way to enforce that themselves. For example, Russian President Vladimir Putin, who is also wanted on an ICC warrant for alleged war crimes in Ukraine, well, he recently visited Mongolia, which is a member state in the ICC, but it's also a Russian ally. Putin was not arrested during that visit. And by the way, it's being reported that there have been more than 700,000 Russian casualties, those killed or wounded in that conflict, with the number of Ukrainian casualties, those killed or wounded, now somewhere between 300,000 and 400,000 in a war that could be ended tomorrow if Russia simply withdrew from the lands of its sovereign neighbor that it invaded now almost 3 years ago. Meanwhile, back here at home, a woman told police that she was sexually assaulted back in 2017 by a man after he took her phone, blocked the door to a California hotel room, and refused to let her leave. That, according to a detailed investigative report made public by police late on Wednesday, the man told police at the time that the encounter had been consensual. He denied any wrongdoing, according to the report. But news of the allegations surfaced last week when local officials released a brief statement confirming that the woman had, in fact, accused the man of sexual assault back in October of 2017 after he had spoken at a Republican women's event in Monterey, California. He was the speaker at the Republican women's event. The report offers disturbing details about the alleged assault of the woman, who the man, according to his lawyer, paid off in 2023. So just last year, as part of a confidential settlement in the matter, the 22-page police report was released in response to a public records request and offers the first detailed account of what the woman alleged to have transpired, an account that is at stark odds with the man's version of the events, citing interviews with the alleged victim, a nurse who treated her, a hotel staffer, another woman at the event, and yes, the assailant himself. Investigators were first alerted to the alleged assault, according to the report, by a nurse who called them after a patient requested a sexual assault exam, a rape kit, essentially. The patient told medical personnel that she believed she was assaulted 5 days earlier, but could not remember much about what happened. She reported something may have been slipped into her drink before ending up in the hotel room where she said that the assault then occurred. Police collected the unwashed dress and underwear that she had worn that night. The woman's partner, who was staying at the same hotel with her, told police that he became worried about her that night after she didn't come back to their room. At 2 a.m., he went to the hotel bar, but she was not there. She made it back, finally, a few hours later, apologizing that she, quote, must have fallen asleep. A few days later, she told her partner that she had been sexually assaulted. The woman who helped organize the California Federation of Republican Women gathering, at which the man was a speaker, told police that she had witnessed him acting inappropriately throughout the night, saw him stroking multiple women's thighs. She texted a friend, as the police report details, that he was giving off a, quote, creeper vibe. So apparently police had that a text from that night. After the event, the woman and others attended an after party where she said she confronted the man, telling him that she, quote, did not appreciate how he treated women. That, she says, is when, quote, things got fuzzy, according to what the woman told the police. She remembered having a drink. She also told police that she argued with the man near the hotel pool, which is an account that is supported by a hotel staffer in the report, a staffer who was sent to handle the disturbance and spoke to police. Soon, the woman told police she was inside a hotel room with this guy who reportedly took her phone, blocked the door with his body so she couldn't leave. She also told police that she remembered, quote, saying no a lot. Her next memory was of lying on a couch or a bed with the man bare-chested, his dog tags dangling from around his neck, the report states. That's pretty specific. After the man finished, she recalled that he threw a towel at her and asked her if she was okay. She told police she did not recall how she got back to her own hotel room that night and had since suffered from nightmares and memory loss. That man, the assailant, according to the police report, is Fox News host and former National Guardsman Pete Hegseth. Yes, that's right. Donald Trump's nominee to head the U.S. Department of Defense, the 3-million-strong largest organization in the nation and the most lethal in the world. He would be in charge of it. At the time of the alleged assault, Hegseth, who is now just 44 years old, was going through a divorce with his second wife, with whom he has 3 children. She filed for a divorce after he had a child with a Fox News producer, who is now his 3rd wife, according to court records. His first marriage ended in 2009, also after infidelity by Hegseth, according to court records. His lawyer, who is a former Trump lawyer, by the way, said in a statement that the police report confirms, quote, what I have said all along, that the incident was fully investigated and police found the allegations to be false, which is why no charges were filed. The report decidedly does not say that the police found that the allegations were false. It's just a Trump lawyer basically now working for Hegseth and making up stuff, making up claims that are simply untrue.
Also known as lies.
Police recommended, in fact, that the case report be forwarded to the Monterey County District Attorney's Office for review. For his part, Hegseth says that he, yes, attended an after party and drank beer. He acknowledged being, quote, buzzed but not drunk. He said the woman led him by the arm back to his hotel room, telling investigators that the sexual encounter that followed was consensual. Hegseth's attorney said a payment was then made to the woman as part of a confidential settlement a few years after the police investigation because Hegseth was concerned that she was prepared to file a lawsuit that he feared could have resulted in him being fired from Fox News. The attorney would not reveal the amount of the payment that was made just last year in October. Well, it might have resulted in him being fired from Fox, but not apparently from disqualifying him from being appointed to head the 3-million-strong Pentagon by Donald Trump, whose transition team, which has refused to allow FBI background checks and vetting of their nominees, as all of the other transition teams throughout history generally have, they claim that they had no idea about this matter before tapping Hegseth for this job, who they are still backing to become the next U.S. Secretary of Defense. We will see how long that one lasts after Trump's appointment to become the next U.S. Attorney General, the nation's top law enforcement officer. That would be Matt Gaetz. Surprisingly, and it really was a surprise, came crashing down on Thursday after the Florida congressman who submitted his resignation to Congress on the day that he was tapped by Trump announced that he was, in fact, withdrawing his bid following, more and more emerging details about pretty disturbing allegations that Gaetz paid thousands of dollars to 17-year-old underage girls for sex, trafficked those minors across state lines, engaged in illicit drug use with them, all of which Donald Trump apparently did know, or at least should have, because none of this came to as a surprise. It has been investigated for years at this point by the U.S. House Ethics Committee. He should have known all of this. He probably did before naming him anyway to be the nation's top law enforcement officer. He has since, as I said, finally dropped out. And I call it a surprise because, you know what? Donald Trump and his buddies usually do not back down from anything. The fact that he did must mean this is really, really bad.
Potentially. Also, you know, there might be a Florida Senate seat opening up if Marco Rubio gets put in as
Secretary there you go. It also should be noted that Matt Gaetz won his race for re-election this year. So he could just show up on January 3rd and say, hey,
I'm back.
Yeah, we will see. In any event, as far as the nominations go, that's one down. We will see how long Hegseth and, frankly, too many other wildly inappropriate Trump appointees last as his presidency seems to be falling apart before it even gets started. I'm not surprised, though a few million MAGA members might be, and it's unlikely to be their last surprise for many of those folks. Longtime self-described MAGA cult member turned leaving MAGA founder, Rich Loges, joins us next on the broadcast with some thoughts after the election and perhaps some advice before the holidays for those who may have to spend some time, whether they like it or not, with MAGA family members and perhaps current or former friends. That's all straight ahead. I'm Brad Friedman, and this is The Bradcast.
The Bradcast and the Green News Report are 100% independent, 100% listener-supported. But we can't do it alone. We need you. Please help us bring real facts to listeners at independent stations around the nation. Please drop by bradblog.com/donate. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Hey, this is Brad. You're listening to an encore presentation of The Bradcast. Yeah.
And Kennedy.
What?
I'm the cult of personality. The cult of personality.
personality.
Yep.
The cult of personality.
Welcome back. It's the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Our friend, longtime climate and energy reporter and podcaster now, and very sharp social media observer, David Roberts, announced this week that he was largely leaving Twitter/X to move over to Blue Sky, as millions of others, largely on the left or in the media, have done since Election Day after getting sort of sick of the neo-Nazi Republican wingnut propaganda that is now being promoted over there on Twitter by far-right Twitter owner and Trump supporter Elon Musk. For the record, while neither Desi nor I have actually left Twitter, right?
Right.
At least not yet.
Not yet.
We're both now officially posting over at Blue Sky ourselves, which I find to be a much, much more welcoming space. It doesn't suppress my posts, for one thing. And now it's kind of like the old good fun Twitter. And it features most of the excellent authoritative accounts that I have come to know, respect, and follow over the years at Twitter. Now they're over at Blue Sky. So if you're not already signed up yourself, it's a great moment to do so via bsky.social. I am really just now beginning to sort of get my feet wet there and learn what is what. But it is a lot like the old good Twitter.
Yeah.
In most ways, I think. And so it should feel familiar to you if you're already on Twitter. You'll find both Desi and me over there at our same old social media handles. I am the Brad Blog, and she is
at Green News Report.
There you go. But at the end of David Roberts' Twitter announcement that he will now be doing most of his daily postings over at Daily Coast, over at Blue Sky, he notes this, quote, "By the way, before I go, the answer to all the retrospective questions about the election is, quote, the information environment, unquote. But he adds, I've accepted that there are too many powerful people who don't want that to be true, so the, quote, Dems are too woke narrative will triumph. Oh, well. Well, we'll see if that's what triumphs or not. But Roberts comes to a similar conclusion that I have come to since the election, that more than anything else, it was a media failure. Corporate media, social media, independent media, resulting in a wildly disinformed electorate about both who Donald Trump was and what he was promising and or conning the electorate about, and about the extraordinary record of the Biden-Harris administration on all manner of things that a misinformed and often purposely disinformed electorate had no idea about. David Roberts' phrase, the information environment, is probably a better one than talking about the media itself. We are currently in a wildly polluted information environment on virtually every level. As we discussed just after the November 5 election, those voters who correctly knew the facts about the top issues that, you know, had come up throughout the campaign that were said to be on voters' minds, like the economy, inflation, crime, immigration, etc., those who actually knew the correct facts about those issues voted for Kamala Harris by huge margins. Those who answered incorrectly about demonstrable facts, you know, like is inflation going up or is it going down? Those who answered incorrectly voted overwhelmingly for Donald Trump. And now just one fresh example of the polluted media environment that we're all now dealing with before I get to my guest today, who is standing by. And I could offer you dozens and dozens more of these at this point, and I probably will in the weeks and months and years ahead. But this out Thursday from Yahoo News. Vice President Kamala Harris rarely, if ever, brought up transgender rights during her 2024 presidential bid. But Donald Trump did, devoting nearly 20% of his ad budget to the issue. That $37 million investment seems to have paid off, Yahoo News reports. According to a new study that they did with YouGov, nearly three quarters of Americans who voted this year, or 74%, say they heard either a lot or some about Harris's, quote, plan to, quote, protect the rights of transgender people, even though she had no such plan. And that is far more than say the same about seven other actual policies that Harris actually campaigned on, like lowering the cost of living for the middle class, securing the U.S. border with Mexico, etc. Only 36% of Americans knew about that. And that, as I see it, sort of summarizes the horrific failure of our wildly polluted information environment and a media system, corporate, social, independent, which either could not or did not want to set the record straight for the American public before the electorate was, you know, accurately informed, as is the job of the media. Now, with that said, I am fully aware that there are some in this country, millions, in fact, who are now far, far beyond the reach of any facts, no matter how good our bad our media infrastructure is. They are now dyed-in-the-wool Trumpers who will believe any lie that comes out of his mouth, no matter how outrageous, ridiculous, provably untrue. And similarly, they will disbelieve anything that comes from non-MAGA-approved media. They are, as my guest today has described on many occasions, both here and elsewhere, members of a cult of, yes, personality. A cult of Trump, a cult known as MAGA. Rich Loges is a now former, longtime, and devout member of the Republican Party after spending years in what he describes as the cult of MAGA. He voted for Donald Trump in both 2016 and 2020 before finally seeing the light, as he tells us, amid the massive, unnecessary COVID deaths that followed in 2021, thanks to failed leadership of both Donald Trump and his own home state governor in Florida, Ron DeSantis. As he has explained on this show in the past, as I now consider him to be our reliable MAGA whisperer, it took some time for him to finally see the light and admit to himself that he had become, in fact, a MAGA cultist who, as a longtime Republican pundit, even wrote scripts for get out the vote calls for Donald Trump for many years. He once told us that he used to spend all day thinking about MAGA before going to bed, thinking about MAGA, probably dreaming about MAGA, only to wake up and do it all again the next day, and that he has at least a dozen or more, several dozen, I think he said, MAGA Make America Great hats to prove it. After finally seeing the light and pulling himself out of the MAGA cult, Rich Loges is now the founder and executive director of LeavingMAGA.org, created to fostering a safe, non-judgmental community for those who leave MAGA, as well as those who have their doubts and or remorse over their devotion to Donald Trump. The Leaving MAGA mission statement, quote, empower others to leave MAGA and tell their stories, foster reconciliation with their friends and family, develop movement leaders to help others leave. Rich Loges, welcome back to the broadcast, my friend.
Brad, always happy to be back with you, and happy Thanksgiving, early Thanksgiving to all listeners.
Thank you, sir. I had hoped to actually speak to you, as you know, in the weeks leading up to the election, but we had a number of scheduling conflicts in being able to pull that off. But I've still got a lot of questions for you, Rich, even though we've got limited time today. First, before I ask you about this year's remarkable election and how it has or hasn't changed your mission, and I try to get some advice from you for our listeners in advance of the inevitable annual family clashes over the Thanksgiving table, you have been spending the last, I guess, almost a year now, I think, speaking to folks who have similarly left MAGA on your Leaving MAGA podcast. And I'm wondering what you have learned from them, either about yourself or your mission at Leaving MAGA over that time by speaking with those folks in the run-up before this year's elections.
Sure. Thank you, Brad, and to the team. Appreciate you having me back. I actually think this is a perfect segue based on what you just mentioned in the introduction about mis and disinformation, because what really stands out in all the testimonials we've published, and everyone can find those at our site, leavingmaga.org. We've got women, we've got young men, we've got just a variety, a diverse assortment of individuals who, to some extent, as I did, fell prey to a lot of the right-wing and MAGA mythologies. And these are beliefs, Brad, and I want to really stress this point, because I think it's important that listeners always keep at the forefront, whether it's at the Thanksgiving dinner table or any time, that we are susceptible to being influenced. And as I had said in my DNC vignette that aired on night one, Donald Trump's superpower, his toxic superpower, is lying. The right wing and the Republican Party lie about everything. So I succumb to mis and disinformation. When I realized that I had, by diversifying my news and information sources, it set me on the pathway to leaving MAGA. And I hear this in all of the testimonials. And in addition, we just started doing interviews and conversation videos with friends and family of those who are in the thrall of MAGA, because we just went into a collaborative relationship recently with the Midas Touch Network. And everyone can find our videos at our YouTube channel, which they can reach through our website. And we've been doing videos about those who left. We've got several friends and family. And I just have to again reiterate my apology, because I am culpable in helping Donald Trump divide our country, pinning complete strangers against each other, tearing asunder friendships, families, communities, and places of worship. And leaving MAGA is a way for me to make amends for what I've done in the past.
So you say what you have heard from the people that you have spoken to and the stories that they have told, that you heard the same thing. What, that they were taken in by the lies in the media, by the lies in the right-wing media? Is that essentially what you heard from those folks?
Yes, and there's another part of this that I think is a relevant point, which is that everyone whom we've spoken with who have offered these testimonials, for what they thought were the right reasons, they supported Trump and MAGA and his candidacy. And I know that this is a statement that understandably a lot of listeners may roll their eyes at, but if we could somehow put ourselves back in that time period when Trump first ran, there were some, I do believe there were some valid issues that were raised and some valid reasons if someone was looking for an outsider disruptor. That is what made me gravitate to Trump's campaign, because I saw him as someone willing to obliterate the established political order. To some extent, those who have offered testimonials had similar views. And I think that when we are around our MAGA friends and family during the holidays, I know this is going to sound very naive, Brad, but I'm just going to put it out there and people can slap back on it. But I've said, you know, maybe we can make some dinners politics free this year, because if we're in a presidential election year, and if we could somehow avoid it, I know it's utopian, and the guy who wrote Utopia got beheaded. So I'm not naive about the evils, you know, the ills of utopia. But if we're going to have those conversations, something that has gotten lost in the last decade is I feel like people have lost sight that we have a lot of relatability to each other, even those who have very different political views. Well, it's very, you know, it's there. That relatability has been overlooked. And I think that the holidays is maybe a way for us to start to rejuvenate it a little bit.
And I've got a specific question that I want to ask you about that. But just very quickly, I want to not get too far ahead of ourselves here, you know, and to get your feeling about the results of the actual election and what the Trumpers are right now falsely, as I see it, painting as an overwhelming mandate for him. It was not overwhelming. In fact, a majority of Americans voted against him once again this year, and he defeated Harris by about 1.5 points in the popular vote, according to the latest numbers. But, you know, a win's a win if those numbers ultimately are certified. But how has that reelection to a second term, how has that affected or changed your hopes and dreams and plans for your work at Leaving MAGA?
I am happy, Brad, to report that we have actually never been busier.
Really?
And I say that not as a testament to myself, it's to credit our team. I knew that on election night, we were not going to win. I served as a co-chair in Florida for Republicans for Harris. I want listeners to know that the entire Harris campaign, we left it all on the field. There was nothing left for us to have given. I'm very proud of the work we did, and I'm sorry we didn't get the outcome that we all wanted and worked hard for. And on the drive home, I will admit, Brad, I was driving and thinking, I wonder what the marketplace is gonna think about leaving MAGA in the morning. Mm-hmm. And that morning, the day after Election Day, I was at work. I was back at work, 6 a.m., thinking about the future. And I was inundated with messages. Rich, don't stop. Rich, this work is needed more than ever. Rich, good. I'm worried that my brother, my mother, my son is going to get even deeper and deeper. Please don't stop. Please don't quit. Mm. And I was so encouraged and heartened by this. And when I founded Leaving MAGA earlier this year, Brad, I did take into account that this result could happen, but our team was undeterred. So I am really happy to say that we are continuing to do that work of empowerment and reconciliation and leadership. And I just want to make one other point on the election. Despite what the results may show, I actually don't believe that the MAGA community grew from this election. And one exhibit of evidence that I will offer is most of the MAGA candidates nationwide lost their elections.
Hmm. That's
And I think there was just worldwide, there has been a rebellion against the incumbent party. Mm-hmm. And we were next up. In that Donald Trump was a change. Mm-hmm. He is a change from President Biden, but he is not an outsider any longer. Donald Trump is as much of an insider as anyone. That's been proven. That's an objective fact that is inarguable. But he was, because we're a two-party system, he was the alternative. We know that many people who voted for Trump also didn't vote down ballot or voted Democratic down ballot. So we know that. So MAGA did not grow and expand from this election.
And in fact, you point to the incumbent parties around the world who have lost, incumbent parties who were in power during the during COVID and then during the inflation thereafter, that of all of the incumbent parties to lose power, the Democratic Party here in the U.S. actually lost the least, if that can be characterized in that way. You heard a few thoughts of my own there at the top about the polluted information environment. So from your vantage point as a former member of the cult, do you feel that that also had an effect, aside from incumbency and all of that, you know, bad luck of the draw and all that? But how much do you feel the information environment, what I describe as the polluted information environment, actually had on voters this year?
I have a slight two-pronged answer to that. I think that mis and disinformation, right? If for listeners, misinformation is unintentionally incorrect information,
right?
Disinformation is deliberate. So you can remember by the D,
right?
Disinformation, deliberately inaccurate.
Mm-hmm.
I think mis and disinformation probably was as primary a factor as any in this election. Now, people may argue and say maybe it was a top three. It is unequivocally provable that it is a primary reason, if not as much as any.
Yep.
And as a result of this election, Brad, as part of Leaving MAGA's work, we are creating workshops, which are mis and disinformation literacy workshops, which we have entitled, Where Did You Hear That? And we are going to start doing these workshops all across the country. And it's not a way to attack people's beliefs, but it is a way for them to think about the origin sources of their information and where they actually heard that. Where did you actually hear that? And
right.
So there is a broader opportunity for the Democratic Party. One of my complaints that I've had about the party for some time, and in fairness, it's true of both parties, but I wasn't working to get the GOP elected. I was working to get Democratic candidates elected.
Mm-hmm.
Politicians are afraid of their voters. This actually fuels mis and disinformation, because the opportunity before us is to get in front of people physically where they are in hostile territory, to get them talking about issues, to get the, everyone listening, let people vent, and then hear what kind of information they are hearing and how we can nonviolently combat that. Because the idea that we can win a mis- and disinformation war solely online has been, again, that isn't accurate.
Right.
If it were accurate, we'd have won 45 states in this election.
There you go.
We know that this isn't the case. And so for the Democratic Party, there are lots of Americans who will spend time to listen and engage with Democratic politicians if the politicians stop being afraid of voters and actually go to them.
Fascinating.
It is a grassroots way of combating what is available with Steve Bannon, right? Flood the zone with fill in the blank, bad word, right? You know, and is it a tall task? Sure. Is it going to require a lot of resources? Absolutely. But what's the cost of not doing it?
It's huge. And you have to, as they like to say, meet people where they are. Well, meet them where they are, but bring some information with you and be willing to talk to them about it, which kind of segues into my final point here. And I think, again, I wish I had more time today, but it's because it's our final broadcast before the break. As you mentioned, you know, many are likely going to be uncomfortably or angrily face to face with MAGA family members over the holidays and unable to avoid politics, Rich, despite your hopes and dreams. But from your very unique perspective here, do you have any specific advice for our progressive listeners who are not MAGA on how they, you know, if they can't convert MAGA family members right there and then, particularly so quickly on the heels of an election like this, how they can at least begin to lay the groundwork to help to do so in the months and years ahead, to sort of lay the pathway to offer an exit ramp, if you will, that then that person may or may not take in the future. How would you approach someone like you at this point, Rich?
So at our site, leavingmaga.org, there's a book that I wrote. And at the very end of this book, which is not lengthy, there is a blueprint that has had real world success for how people who have friends and family in MAGA, how they can have better conversations. And one of the approaches that we include in this blueprint, in this how-to, is that those who are not in MAGA, I want to encourage all of you who are going to be around your MAGA friends and family, extend the olive branch and say that I would like to have more of the kind of relationship that we may have had before 2015 and 16. And I know that for a lot of listeners, they might be thinking, well, why do I need to do that? Mm-hmm. The my MAGA brother or son or sibling or best friend should be the one doing that. And I respect that point. Mm-hmm. And I know it's a big ask, but I don't doubt that people not in MAGA do want some of those relationships restored. They want to see a reconciliation. And it is a way by doing it to reopen opportunity and reopen that door to say, I would like to try to have the kind of friendship, kinship that we had before 2015 and 16, and not let politics interfere with that. And as part of this, Brad, for all of you listeners, if it gets heated, I want to tell you what not to do.
Okay.
Facts and bringing up facts and talking about the media sources, it's going to inflame what might already be an incendiary environment.
Even though you've got a program that is, where did you hear that? Is that
where
right?
Where did you hear that?
Right.
That's right. Where did you hear
but
that?
But you're saying don't ask that over the Thanksgiving table.
It's just the emotions, because the emotions are too high. And when they're so high like that, we wind up shooting ourselves in the foot when we're trying to have civility, and we wind up having more of a conflict, and then it becomes a food fight, figuratively and maybe literally,
right,
at
okay.
that moment.
Well,
and Brad, I don't think that Leaving MAGA is the sole. We have the sole answer to this. We're learning along the way as much as anyone, but that blueprint we have, that includes some do's and don'ts, it actually has had some real world success. And I would encourage others to read it, to absorb it, and then try to apply it in the conversations they're going to have upcoming in holidays.
Available from your website. What is the name of the book there?
It's called My MAGA Odyssey is what it's entitled.
Okay.
And it's got a little bit about myself, my MAGA journey, and then it's got that blueprint at the very end of it.
All right. Leave the where did you hear that question to the professionals, at least for now. and I think I lied, Rich. One more really quick one, almost a yes and no here. But and I realize this may be just pure speculation from you that I hope to have you on the show to continue discussing in the months ahead. But do you think whatever happens in the Trump administration reboot, whatever it turns out to be, do you think it's going to bring more MAGA folks into his fold, or is it going to lead to a whole bunch of new Rich Logises finally coming to see the light about the greatest con man the world has ever known?
Well, I will say, and let me, if I may, Brad, just quickly clarify a point. If for those of you in your Thanksgiving conversations, if you feel like there's an opportunity to ask, where did you hear that? Do it.
Okay.
Do it. Okay. Do it if you feel like in that moment you can bring it up without there an argument starting. So okay. I definitely want to encourage. My apologies if that wasn't clear. So okay. Do it if you feel like it warrants it. I actually think that one of the approaches we should avoid is the "I told you so," because what's going to happen in the coming months and years, Brad, under Trump's second term here, is that he's not really going to fix anything for the people who hired him to fix whatever economic challenges they may have, which are real.
Mm-hmm.
Those challenges are real. Most of us are going to have those anxieties throughout the duration of our lives. But as Donald Trump doesn't actually fix anything except for the wealthiest and the most powerful, you're going to start to see MAGA people have doubts. And we could either say, "I told you so," or we could say, "Hey, there's an exit ramp potentially.
Yeah.
Hey, there's an opportunity. Hey, you know, there's this group I met, Leaving MAGA." And you know what? For those of you out there, Thanksgiving, if you feel like you've got an opportunity to introduce your MAGA friends and family to what we're doing, "Hey, I know this guy. I heard this guy who's in MAGA." Do it. Do it if the opportunity's there. But I think, Brad, truthfully, there's going to be a lot of disappointed people, and that disappointment can open up. It can actually, I do believe it will happen, that more and more are going to start to feel some remorse and some regret.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think they're going to be reminded about why he was such a disastrous president the first time. I think those reminders are going to come pretty quickly. I think they're already coming during the appointments process here. And I think your advice to now, extend an olive branch right now so folks know they have it to reach back to it in the coming months and years. Probably very sound advice. Rich Logis, the founder and executive director of leavingmaga.org, a very important organization as I see it. You can find him and their work, a lot of stuff at their website, of course, including their YouTube conversations. You can also find them, I believe, over on Blue Sky Now at Leaving MAGA over there. Rich, always a delight speaking with you, my friend. Thank you so much for all you do, for joining us to talk about it, and I hope you and yours have a pleasant Thanksgiving holiday with not too many literal food fights.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Brad, to you and the team. Appreciate it as always.
Thank you, sir. Okay, so there's some advice for you.
Yeah, and you know, I think something that has worked for me a little bit with some of my MAGA
with all of your MAGA family members?
Well, some of them is to say, look, you know, we all want the same thing. We want the nation to be successful. We want people to be prosperous. We just disagree on how to get there. So let's find common ground on things that we can work on together.
Has that worked?
It has with some people, not everybody. But listen, the other part of what they do over at Leaving MAGA is they have created a community for former MAGA folks and for their friends and families to help them take that exit ramp to return to normalcy. Because part of what brought people into MAGA, Rich has said before, is that need for community.
Yeah, and advice for friends and family of people who are still in MAGA on how to help them, how to reach out and like he said, you know, extend an olive branch.
Yeah,
because I think that's the
starting point. It's a long process, not a quick one.
And I'm sure a lot of people are out there listening saying, "Well, the hell with them. Who cares?"
Well, we'll see.
And I do understand that. But at some point, we're going to have to come together somehow in order to move forward. It may be the second reconstruction here in the U.S. But anyway, Eternal optimist, always trying to look forward. Yes. Quick break, and we are back with Green News Report and Desi Doyen, always optimistic. That's straight ahead on the Bradcast. I'm Brad Friedman. You're listening to the Bradcast. We are 100% listener-supported thanks to listeners like you who stop by bradblog.com/donate.
You're listening to an encore presentation of the Bradcast.
Well, I hope that our friends up in Northern California, Oregon, Washington, we got a lot of affiliates up there. Hope you guys are drying out at this point.
Yes.
And everything is okay after the last couple of days, as discussed in our latest Green News Report.
Winds here in Northern California gusting to 84 miles an hour, and now here comes the atmospheric rivers.
Back-to-back major storms slam the Pacific Northwest. Climate change intensified every hurricane in 2024, new study confirms. Plus, New York governor revives congestion pricing to rein in traffic and air pollution in New York City.
What do you know about that? All of those stories and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
It's pretty cool how our nation's climate policy is like a battle over a thermostat. Dad comes in and turns it down, then 4 years later, Mom turns it back up. Over and over until we drown.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen. What the hell is going on in Washington, Oregon, and Northern California?
Well, as we go to air, it's a 1-2 punch of major storms pummeling the Pacific Northwest. A deadly bomb cyclone with hurricane-force winds combined with an atmospheric river, both unleashing torrential rains and intense flooding from Northern California to British Columbia, knocking out power to nearly a million customers.
Yikes.
Fueled by unusually warm Pacific Ocean waters, the storm system rapidly intensified in less than 24 hours, one of the most intense storms ever recorded in its location, according to the National Weather Service.
Rapid intensification. Where have I heard that before? Over and over and over again over the past 6 months.
In the Atlantic Ocean, a new study confirms that human-caused climate change has increased the intensity and wind speeds of nearly every hurricane since 2019 and every hurricane this year. Climate Central found that elevated ocean temperatures driven by human-caused global warming boosted the destructiveness of all 11 named storms in 2024, pushing each into a higher category than it would have reached otherwise in a world without climate change. The Biden administration this week asked Congress for $100 billion to refill FEMA's chronically underfunded disaster relief fund to help Americans affected by the relentless stream of major, record-breaking extreme weather disasters over just the last 2 years.
$100 billion?
Yep. A quarter of that funding would go to farmers experiencing crop and livestock losses, the rest to infrastructure, water system repairs, and disaster loans to small businesses. FEMA distributes billions in disaster aid every year, and every year must divert funding from long-term recovery and reconstruction projects. It's unclear if the request will pass in the Republican-controlled House.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of disasters...
You mean the Republican-controlled House?
No, Republican President-elect Donald Trump.
Ah.
He nominated South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem, a climate science denier, to head the Department of Homeland Security, which includes FEMA, at a time when damage from extreme weather is soaring, primarily due to climate change.
She may not be a denier for long.
As governor, Noem has been criticized for her failure to respond to flooding disasters in 2019. She also turned down millions of dollars in federal energy efficiency rebates that would have gone to South Dakota residents, and she turned down grants for resilient infrastructure. Here's Noem in 2022.
Do you think that climate's changing? I think that the science has been varied on it, and it hasn't been proven to me that what we're doing is affecting the climate.
Oh, brother.
In more positive news, the U.S. has an enormous cache of rare earth elements hidden within its coal ash waste. That's according to a new analysis from the University of Texas at Austin. Coal ash is the toxic waste left over from burning coal, which has been piling up across the country for decades. Rare earth metals aren't actually rare, but they are critical for manufacturing digital devices, electric cars, and a host of products. Right now, the U.S. is almost entirely dependent on China for rare earth metals, but the researchers estimate there's more than $8 billion worth of those elements mixed up in coal ash waste dumps.
Really?
Enough to significantly bolster the national supply without any new mining.
Well, that's quite a twist.
Finally, in New York, a first-in-the-nation congestion pricing initiative is set to restart in January after it was abruptly halted by Governor Kathy Hochul earlier this year. The revised, scaled-down version will charge private vehicles $9 to enter Manhattan below 60th Street. The revenue will go to fund repairs and upgrades to the city's subway and regional train network and reduce traffic and pollution impacts on city residents.
And not a moment too soon. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find, follow, and share us on the social medias at Green News Report. We are off next week for the holiday. We will see you thereafter. We hope you have a safe, happy, and warm one somehow. Until then, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Thank you for being a friend.
Thank you indeed. We are mighty grateful to all of you. As you heard the man say, we will be taking the next week off, but thank you for getting us this far. It's a much needed few days off. Hope you can tolerate it. We will be back after the holidays. By the way, while we are gone, don't forget, you can find me now on Blue Sky. I want to say on the Blue Skies. On Blue Sky, I am the Brad Blog. Desi Doyen is Green News Report on
Come
Blue Sky.
By and say hi.
We're also still on the Twitters and the Facebooks and everywhere else, but we'd love to see from you, sort of. My thanks also to our guest today, Rich Logis of LeavingMAGA.org, and for all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's show, it's always available for free to download at BradBlog.com. Thanks to those of you who have hit one of those donate buttons, or better yet, please consider signing up for a monthly donation automated of any amount you can afford. We really need you to keep going on your public airwaves. Drop me an email. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com. And as noted on all the social medias, I am the Brad Blog. We'll see you there. Until we see you here next time, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck and thank you, world.
Thank you for being a friend.
I want to thank you.
Thank you for being